vehicle development and the model. This is an area that's close to my heart. Why? Because people development is the center of the universe. Let me say it again. People development is the center of the universe because it's only through people that the mission is accomplished. Everything we do revolves around people. So it makes sense, in our humble view, that a lot of intention and effort and energy goes in to the development of the people that make it happen in our respective organizations. Now, MultiView, if you were to boil us down to our essence, and I know we do quite a few different things, but what we are is a teaching organization. That is what we are at our core. Whether it be technical teaching about how to use different software applications like F9, different forecasting tools, monitoring systems, the things that we're known for to a lot of people. Or if it's teaching conceptual things or frameworks for the modern hospice organization, we're a teaching company. And I think the conference center and the media center are physical manifestations of what we are. That we're committed to really the educational experience for the betterment, really, of the human condition, the minimization, the elimination, possibly, of human suffering. That's really what we're in this for. And we believe that we have a role to play. It's also a statement that we're not going away. We're in this thing for the long term because we believe. When you think about the model system, you know, this thing that we're advocating with an intense people development focus, that is the paradigm of a world-class hospice organization. I think that the modern or hot dog hospices are moving from the paradigm of we are the providers of care to the paradigm or mindset that we are a teaching organization. Everything we do in the experience, from interacting with referral sources and the community to interacting with patients and families, it is all about teaching, isn't it? Management of the expectations so that people can be happy and satisfied with the experience that we've created. And created is really the key term there. That they're satisfied with this. But we're making their lives better by really, I'll say, locking into the essence of life itself, which is that we are all constantly evolving and becoming hopefully better. That is, in our viewpoint, the purpose of this whole deal anyway. And hopefully, we're getting better and better and better. We think that the overall direction of the universe is that of an upward momentum. Things are getting better. And so to look at an organization, especially the modern hospice organization, as becoming these fantastic teaching institutions, if that doesn't put a little steam in your stride, I don't know what will. It's not about staying the same. It's about getting better. And that's really the hope of the human condition. If we don't think people can get better and do get better, this whole exercise of people development is futile. Let's move on. Let's go home and take it easy. But we know that our efforts in people development are not wasted, that it's not futile or futile, and that we do get results. So with that belief, because beliefs are important, let's delve into people development and the model. The first thing that we're going to teach is what is the model? Okay, I'm not going to go into a lot of definition here because that's covered in other materials. But what you're teaching at your organization is your model, whatever you want to call it. The model is just our term. You might call it the way or your system or your approach or the paradigm or some other cool phrase. And some hospices have come up with very cool terminology that they identify with surrounding their model. But that's what you're teaching ultimately in really everything you do, is your way, your system. Now, the definition of the model is this. The model is the intentional design of a hospice culture that balances purpose and financial realities simultaneously to create a sustainable world-class experience. Now, let's break that down. It's the intentional design of what? A culture. Okay? Culture is so important. It's the feel, the tone of the organization, the essence of everything we do. And really, it's the thing that separates so many organizations, and how people feel about the organization is demonstrated in culture. So you're teaching the model, which really is culture, and culture is so powerful. In fact, culture eats CEOs and great ideas for lunch. I know folks will come back from the clinical leader program, especially if it's just one or two individuals, and they'll be inspired and have confidence, and they've passed the test, you know, they went through this thing, and they're ready to rock when they come back to the hospice. And culture will beat them back into submission. They'll come back and the leader goes, oh, you went to that MVI thing. Oh, that's nice. And unless that individual is supported or the individual is extraordinarily strong and tough-minded, they'll be beaten back, you know, into the same old way. Not that the ideas and learning will be lost. They'll lie dormant until the opportunity arises where it will be watered and it, you know, the ideas will be embraced. Because most individuals that come from this type of event believe that this is the way. And once they get that encouragement and support from top leadership, boom, that's when things really start to happen. Some hospices send a large number, or what I'll call critical mass, that really shifts the culture. It can be done a variety of ways, but we know that, again, at the heart of this whole deal is culture. So the model is the intentional design of a hospice culture that balances purpose and financial realities simultaneously. It has to be taught that purpose and financial realities or profit are not mutually exclusive things. And there's a sickness in many hospice cultures in that any linkage to the financial realities is viewed as a negative thing. In our cultures, we have to bring these two points together so that they function in harmony, just like a healthy body would, where all the parts are working together. And let people know that this is about the mission. It is about purpose. But it's also about recognizing these financial realities. And this idea of balance, it's not like they're equal, because purpose should be much higher. It should be way up here. However, the financial results, which should be positive, should be a natural byproduct of us doing excellent work. And that nothing is sustainable if it's not financially viable. And so we have to really work at getting that message across. I know that I probably spend 2 or 3 hours with clinicians on this single idea, because there are such barriers that have to be overcome. But at some point, and sometimes you have to say it probably 6 or 7 different ways, and hopefully with one of those ways, it clicks. Oh, I get it. This makes sense. It doesn't feel bad anymore. So that internal conflict or indigestion that resides in so many people in hospice has to be resolved, that the linkage between purpose and financial realities is okay. So we have the intentional design of a hospice culture that balances purpose and financial realities simultaneously to create what? A sustainable world-class experience. Sustainable relates to our economic performance. And of course, again, our economic performance has to be positive. We can't be dependent upon community support. We have to be able to make it on our earned dollars. That is our money that we get from Medicare, Medicaid, commercial insurance, all this. We need to be able to make it and have a positive operating residual. Sustainability, another key idea that we're introducing into the people development process. So we have the intentional design of a hospice culture that balances purpose and financial realities simultaneously to create a sustainable world-class hospice experience. The word experience, another key word, because that's what we're doing. All of our lives are really a series of experiences, moment to moment. We are feeling, we are walking sensations. And what we're doing is intentionally crafting this experience by managing the expectations meticulously of all consumer groups, referral sources, patients and families. We're meticulously managing their expectations. Expectations that have been introduced from society, from other healthcare organizations, from other hospices, because all those are coloring the water, as well as what we're going to do. And it's within all these other expectations that we're able to denominate and distinguish our services from all others. There's a lot of complaining. Andrew, you know, how do we make ourselves different? Aha, there are so many hospices doing it the same. It is easy to be different just by focusing on the things that you do well and, of course, executing them with an uncommon level of excellence. That's how you do it. It's right there in front of us, how we provide a basis for people to discriminate on our behalf. So we're creating this experience. And I would suggest you look at this like you're a patient or you're a family member, and just sit yourself down and say, what would make this fantastic? What could we be doing in addition? How could we do what we're doing better? And what could we take away that would actually improve the experience? A lot of folks are totally hung up on the idea that adding more is better. The visit is a great teaching example. More is actually less. Because at a certain point, there's a law of diminishing returns where we become intruders on the sacred experience. People don't want to have a lot of people coming in and out. Our job is to teach, to help people become comfortable, to teach from this framework of this experience that we're most familiar with. You don't want to be interrupting very important times, moments that they will never have again. However, there's this idea that in a lot of people's minds, especially clinicians, that we have to be, quote, doing something to be adding value, or to be doing our jobs. And that's something that we need to teach. So what are we teaching in our people development processes? We're teaching what? The model, your way, your proprietary system of hospice, which essentially is culture. And where does culture come from? What is the primary factor of culture? And some people will disagree with this. We believe that culture equals the CEO. Sure, there's a culture that has evolved organically over time. However, the CEO or the top leader of the organization or perceived leader really sets the tone. The tone comes from the top, and everybody takes their cues from this cultural icon. And it happens pretty dramatically. It's how you have a hospice that has a census of 50, and the CEO, with vision, enthusiasm, and great persistence, is able to take that organization within a really short period of time, and suddenly they have 250 patients a day. What happened? Are they using steroids? No. The leader has cast some different expectations and is effective at communicating and is relentless in their pursuit of the vision. They see it in their minds and they just keep going for it. And on some level, people are identifying with it. If this is true, it seems to me that the CEO or the leader needs to be involved with the people development process. And that this involvement is at the beginning of the onboarding process. That is, right from the start, people get to see and feel the tone from the top. They get a sense of the accepted behaviors, of what's possible within the organization. The CEO is a walking billboard of culture. Now, it's important that when we're teaching about our way or our system or the model, that we emphasize that this is not just about financially driven initiatives and NPR amounts. The model kind of gets a bad rap, but I understand where it comes from. I mean, NVI is a financial-oriented company. And a lot of folks, quote, think of the model in financial terms, and we have to definitely steer away from overemphasizing the financial component. And when asked to describe the model, say something like this: it's our way of creating a high-quality, predictable experience. Or it's our way of guaranteeing care. It's our way or our system that helps important things not be overlooked or people from falling through the cracks. I wouldn't even mention the financial component, but I would make sure that it's clearly recognized and it's an underlining element of the model, but not overemphasized. We also need to describe the model process or what we went through to create the model, because everybody in the organization needs to have some awareness of how this came into being and that it's an important chapter in our hospice's story. And I think you say this: we sat down as a team. We drew out the very best ideas from our staff as well as outside, and we incorporated them into this coherent, coordinated system of care. We began with the patient family experience, putting ourselves in that situation and asking the question, what would make a great experience? So we started first with the front lines of care, and then moved backwards throughout the organization, clear back to administrative and supporting services functions. But it started with the patient family experience. People love this idea because it speaks to our sense of mission. And then I would describe the four areas of design work, those being team design, where we designed and thought about the different disciplines that we would want to have involved with the experience, then the specific design of our hospice's visit for every discipline, perhaps the most important design element of all, where we took apart the visit and truly incorporated all the thoughtful recommendations of folks that were highly experienced, and we got it down into the various teachable phases of the visit. And of course, you know, the visit would be one of the things that everybody in the organization, from clinicians clear through to administrative functions, everybody would understand how the visit is put together at our hospice. Then, of course, our product design, the design of, again, all our physical products, from our hospice menus to all our collateral materials and our teaching tools and life disc units and all these wonderful things, and how they were put together and how we rated ourselves and graded ourselves from A to F, and how we really worked on those things that needed to be improved and then got rid of the things that weren't really working or adding value at our hospice. And then, of course, the last step, you know, we started to work on our supporting services and our administrative functions so that they truly supported the mission and the front lines of care. This is your story. So that everybody has this basis to appreciate what happened before and what's happening behind the scenes, so that we can pull off this high-quality, predictable experience. Now, top teachers have a characteristic beyond technical expertise. And what do you think that characteristic would be? I would say it's probably this. It's belief in what they are selling. If you've listened to Marketing and the Model, that audio message, confidence is important for selling hospice services as well as ideas. And when we're in an educational role, we are selling ideas. So we need to believe, I'll say at a very deep level, in what we're trying to communicate. We have to know the subject matter better than almost anybody, where we've thought through all the different ramifications of different things. Not that we can know everything, but we have to know it better than our students and be able to communicate this with some degree of passion, because passion and feeling are evidence of belief. And if the training experience is the cure for insomnia, we have a problem. And a lot of hospices' training and orientation systems, I mean, you can just see the eyes roll back in people's head. They are just as boring as can be. And we've got to introduce some juice, some energy to the experience. And it's easier than we think. One thing I always say to classes are, what are we? And what comes back? We are teachers. And I would say that probably periodically, or at least every day in your training system. What are we? Teachers. Why? Because we're moving to the paradigm of the teaching organization. We are students first, learning, and then going out and teaching. Now let's talk about the world of threes relating to people development and the model. There are three groups. And if there's three groups, we need three different curriculums. And there's probably at least three different categories of learning. And so let's discuss this world of threes. First of all, there are three groups. There could be more, but we're going to stick with our three theme here. They are leadership, all staff, and the board of directors. Each of these different student groups needs a slightly different curriculum. Each of the curriculums would have common elements because we want everybody working off the same page and from the same mindset. But each of these curriculums would also contain specific things that relate to the specific roles within the organizational framework. The common elements, to me, would be teaching our vision and values, the visit, where everybody in the organization understands how we deliver our compassion and care, as well as the communication of our standard operating parameters. This would be our NPR amounts for every area in the hospice, as well as our clinical expectations, you know, caseloads and visit durations and visits per week and all this stuff. You could have marketing stuff on there as well, so that everybody's on the same page and there's no area of the hospice that's left out, so that anybody in the organization could look at a financial statement or different reports and know who is in the model and who is outside of the model. This would be really clear. And this kind of information would be in all the different curriculums, as well as in our model cards. Our model cards are basically an MVI recommendation where you take a business card and you put all your operational parameters on both sides of these cards. It also could be a bifold or a trifold or a quadfold if you're an extremely complicated hospice. But every area needs to be denominated for this unifying effect of the model. I mean, it's great when a volunteer or social worker or whatever can look at a financial statement and go, you know, we got three areas that are outside of the model. And this is fantastic, this awareness, as well as who's knocking it out of the park. And that's, I think, a great thing about the model, because it does introduce this idea of transparency, which is highly desirable in the modern organization. We have examples of these cards if your hospice wants to see what they look like. They're used by a lot of hospices. And some of you may be feeling overwhelmed, thinking, oh my God, I've got to make these curricula. And actually, we've done a lot to take a lot of that burden off you, and that MVI has already issued a curricula for leadership, all staff, board of directors, that you can either take our books and use them as is, you know, this would be workbook 6, 7, and 8, or you can take the content from those and incorporate it within your proprietary system. And we're completely open to that. We've been communicating at least the financial dimension for a long time, as well as the visit, when you think about it. And so you can take these things and get it up to speed pretty quickly and take out what you don't like, add what you need to, and go and start teaching this stuff and getting it deep within your hospice's cultures. Now, the all-staff curricula would contain the most common elements. And I would say it's not hospice business light. It actually teaches the business of hospice on a much deeper level than most leaders, staff, or board members ever get in a hospice. And this would be for everybody. This would be for volunteers, CNAs, social workers, nurses, chaplains, all indirect areas. Everybody would go through this system and be expected to know it. I think there's this tendency to want to dumb down the numbers because, quote, clinicians will never get this, which is so insulting because people have far more capability than a lot of folks want to give them credit for. And I think I spent the first decade as a CFO dumbing things down that I shouldn't have. I mean, they're almost like geriatric financial statements, you know, income, expense, or whatever. When really, we can teach this at a relatively deep level, and people will get it, and it will build confidence, and they will feel engaged. And they will see the organization as being unique in that it really takes an interest in us knowing all the facets of the hospice operation. So they're privileged to work for such an organization. Don't dumb down the numbers. Obviously, we don't want to go into detail that is nauseating, but it needs to be sufficient and within, I'll say, a proper balance. So we have our all-staff curricula. We'd also have the leadership curricula. And this would have a lot of the basic elements again, but it would also have expectations of leaders. That is, what is expected of a leader within this organization. It might have the law of the lid and the law of replication and the importance of setting the example or leading by example. Anything that's important in your organization should be denominated in this curricula. And then, of course, the board of directors curricula. They serve a special oversight and fiduciary role within a hospice organization. And they need to be cautioned and really, I'll say, schooled in how to be effective board members. We have a great CD on this subject because sometimes board members get into things that they shouldn't. And sometimes they also miss or don't pick up on things that they should. And therefore, they need their own curricula that includes, again, the common elements. For example, board members need to buy into the vision and values. They need to get the operational metrics of the organization as well. And they really need to be vested members of this organization and not just folks that are floating out there and making decisions in a vacuum. They need to get who we are. So I think you can see how these curricula really connect the organization in a very powerful way. Now let's address the big question. And what is that question? Well, it's simply this. How do people learn? Obviously, we learn in a lot of different ways. A lot of it tends to be experiential. We touch the stove and we get burnt. And that's an example of a real experience. Or we can have synthetic experiences where we see an image of somebody touching a stove and getting burnt. Or hear a tale, an auditory visualization of somebody getting burnt from touching the hot stove. Or we can read about it. But probably the thing that links all these things together is that there are images created in our minds. I'll say this. The images in our minds run our lives, whether these are real or just perceptions of the way the world works, which are tied to our beliefs. The experiential learning situation is probably the most powerful, and we should incorporate it wherever possible. However, in our people development systems, we're going to probably have to rely on a lot of synthetic experiences. That is the use of our textual documents, our visuals, whether they be our media productions or our props. And we may be able to have some, I'll say, synthetic real experience in that people can role play, they can practice the ideal visit or whatever the task that we're trying to master, whatever that is. To create, again, these visual images or these beliefs in the way that we're doing things. Obviously, whatever we do, people have to believe that it's effective and that it works. And this is where whoever's presenting, again, needs to have this high degree of confidence. And there are all these different ways that we can project these images into people's minds. And a lot of hospices have become myopic or relied on single courses when there are multiple avenues at our disposal. We can have live presentations. We can have our textual materials. We can have all kinds of cool graphics. We can use web learning. We can use audio media. We can use visual media. We can use props. We can test. Say test and everybody tightens up. Or you might call it a focus tool. I do know this. I've tested thousands of hospice leaders at this point, and guess what? Testing works. If it doesn't, then I think probably most school systems and universities have it wrong. It does give us some indication if learning took place, and I would highly encourage hospices to test. It helps the hospice find out if learning did take place. It also builds the confidence of the person being asked to demonstrate their learning. So it's beneficial to both parties. We use zip scan units. In fact, MVI has two because we believe in it. We use it for our own staff. Obviously, we use it in order to expedite the grading process and introduce a high degree of objectivity in the grading situation. Otherwise, things can get a little bit weird. You want to keep it as objective as you can, but testing is important. It also really focuses people. That's what we call the focus tool sometimes, because when people know that they're going to be required to demonstrate their learning, they learn more. Folks don't just nod off. They pay attention. And that's one of the secret weapons, I'll say, in a lot of our tough training programs, is that we put out the pretest and people know that they're going to be tested. And guess what? I would probably say that 50% of the learning takes place in the pretest period as people are preparing to come to class. Then when they come to the program, they actually are familiar with the subject matter and far more learning takes place than if it would just all be done at the same time. We're giving people time to really marinate in the information and become comfortable with it. So in my book, testing is important. It also sends a clear message that we're not messing around here and that we're very serious about what we're doing. And while we're on this point, let me just say this. A lot of, quote, professional educators say, Andrew, you don't understand adult learning. And I'm saying, oh, yeah. We've had folks 70 plus years go through our courses fine. To me, there's a lot of weenieism in the educational areas, in that we're not willing to hold people to high standards. Well, I take hospice, I guess, far more serious than that. I expect a great job to be done. And I know this, if people can't remember it, they're not going to do it. I want to have some confidence that when somebody's asked to do something, that they can do it and do it well. And in order to do that, they have to be able to remember what they're supposed to do. Okay? Yeah, some folks may have to blow a few cobwebs out of their brains, and that's okay, and probably crack a book for the first time in 30 years. But if we're going to be a serious learning and teaching organization, I don't see how you get around this. And in fact, I think annual testing is a great idea because people drift. We go along and we start out doing it the way, and over time, we'd gravitate to the right or the left or whatever. And sometimes we need something that brings us back to center. An annual test is a good way to do that. And I don't even think 80% is good enough. I think if we're serious about what we put into our tests, that is the content, we should expect 100%. I took one of our own tests recently. I got an 80 on it. Well, to some folks, maybe that's okay. All I know is that I looked at it and there's 20% of the material that I did not know. Are we willing to do an 80% fantastic visit? I don't think so. I think if we're going to put the effort into this type of test, 100%, put only the meat of the subject matter in it. And so it doesn't have to be lengthy, but it should contain the core things, the most important elements of whatever we're trying to teach. So in our view, test. We're still in the world of threes, by the way, so let's come on back to that. Let's discuss the three categories of learning, and they are informal learning, formal learning, and reinforcement. Formal learning usually consumes most people development efforts. This audio CD is an example of formal learning or a formal structure, and we put tremendous energy into it, often ignoring or not giving adequate attention really to informal learning. And perhaps there's more learning occurring in the informal setting than in the formal. It's debatable, but it's significant to say the least. Now, with informal learning, we're talking about, for example, observations of leadership. What is accepted or tolerated behavior? What's rewarded behavior? What's deemed as unacceptable behavior? This is all informal learning, things that are not written down often. How about observations of how the organization as a whole responds to different situations? That's part of informal learning. How about the use of wall space? When you walk down the halls of your hospice, what do you see? Do you see piles of paper stacked up along the edges? Or is it something that is well thought out, something that there's visible intention, that there's wall plastics up or certain colors or whatever? This all tells us something really about our cultures, how we conduct meetings. I mean, is it a loose thing? Is it tight? Is it somewhere in the middle? Is it humorous? All this communicates culture. So we need to give it more attention than perhaps we've given it in the past. And then there's formal learning. Most of us are familiar with this. What's taught, who's teaching it, what sequence, what are the expectations, what are the behavioral metrics, what are the technical aspects of the work, computer curricula, blah, 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 business curricula, all these things, the methods that we've discussed before, live presentation, textual, graphic, web learning, audio, props, testing, all these are components of formal learning. And that brings us to the category of reinforcement, which usually incorporates aspects of both formal and informal learning, with this difference. We're conscious that people don't stay in the same spot forever. As I said earlier, people drift. You start out centered, they've just come out of orientation or a training, and over time, the static of life, all the inputs, the personalities, people drift to the right or left or whatever, and folks need to come back to the center. So we need to have mechanisms to do this. And there are all kinds of ways to reinforce, really, the culture or the way. Obviously, just the observations of leaders. What people see on a regular basis enforces the culture. Our key words or phrases. We encourage all hospices to have key words or phrases that they teach from that almost instantaneously bring people back to center without long explanations. If I say there's always room at the inn, probably most people will get what that means, okay? I would suggest using some pizzazz phrase or something that's kind of catchy, but something that almost instantaneously conveys the meaning and intention and brings people back to center. Meeting formats. There's a huge opportunity for reinforcement of the way or the culture when we really put some structure around our meeting formats. As far as what's acceptable behavior, what's not acceptable, how we go about our meetings, all this is important. Again, tremendous opportunity. Our reporting systems, all of our reporting systems can be infused with really cultural reinforcement tools, especially financial reports. Why? Because a lot of times you can add different textual boxes. One thing you might want to do is incorporate the purpose of every department on the financial statements. This is why you are here. So there's never a question, well, I didn't know I was supposed to be doing that. Well, it's in your financial statement every month. So just incorporating cultural statements or statements of purpose in our standard reports is a great way to reinforce culture. Of course, we've already discussed testing or focus tools on an annual basis. That reinforces culture. And then there's the classic MVI doctrine of issuing quarterly visit CDs. In our view, again, the visit is the most important aspect of what we do. And when we've created our model, we should have an ideal visit laid out for all disciplines. And it needs to be broken into the various stages and all this. And what we recommend is on a quarterly basis, you issue these ideal visit CDs to each clinician, which are 15 to 20 minutes in length, that covers the major aspects of the visit, describes the visit, and hopefully brings people back to center if they've drifted in their clinical practice. When you think about all the windshield time in hospice and all the time we spend on the road, couldn't we redeem some of this time for the most important thing that we do, and that's the visit? I remember one mega hospice with thousands of patients a day that we helped them put together their educational system. And of course, we brought in all the top clinicians and really constructed the ideal visits. And we issued the CDs and everything and got great results. But then somebody had the idea that, you know, clinicians aren't professional at recording these things. And, you know, she coughed during the message and she said, tarantula when she's meant to say tranquilize or whatever. And they ended up bringing in this golden throat person here at XYZ Hospice. This is how we do this. And I'll say this, the effectiveness of those messages just went away. The stick value wasn't there. Why? Because we all can sense on some level if somebody's the real deal, whether they've really did it. And you knew that this golden throat had never set foot in a patient's house or is not an expert. So I'll say this, when we're putting these things together, don't strive for technical perfection. It's not necessary. What's critical, though, is that you capture the feel. Okay? So quarterly visit CDs. And once in a while, you might want to switch them up where the CNAs receive the nursing visit or the social worker visit or social workers receive the nursing visit so that we all kind of know what the other disciplines are doing. It's a great thing to do. Vision and values needs to be reinforced, I think, at least semi-annually. So I would actually encourage hospices to put together their V&V or vision and values CDs and issue them on a semi-annual basis. Because everybody needs to be reminded where we're going and what we're about. So reinforcement. Let's stretch our imaginations a little bit as we're considering people development. Imagine that your hospice has 2,500 employees. How would you train them? Could you do it the way you're doing it now? Obviously, when we're dealing with lots of people, and hopefully our organizations are trying to grow, we're going to need ways of replicating excellence. So here are some ideas. Shorten or limit your training time. You may be thinking, Andrew, this is going in the opposite direction. We need more training time. This is where the use of constraints comes into play. We can get better results with less time if we focus on the things that are important and get rid of the fluff. Stephen Covey always used this example, and I thought it was so powerful. He talked about a banking operation where it used to take 6 months to train branch managers, where they would work all the various positions, and then, of course, after completing the program, they would be given their branch. Well, they really looked at what needed to be done. What were the essential skills? And they condensed it to a one-month program. And they found that the folks that came out of the one-month program were better trained than folks that came out of the six-month program. In hospice terms, if it takes us 4 months to train an RN, let's limit it to 28 days and see what we can do with an intense program. And I think we'll be surprised. Maybe we can't do it in 28 days. Maybe it ends up being 40 days. But if it's better than what we're doing right now, it's going to help our hospice. Our hospice is going to be much more scalable. And we're not going to burn out as many folks when we're in seasons of growth. So it makes sense. Again, we're stretching our thinking here. I would probably recommend replicating a patient environment so that we can role play and people can practice and they can do it over and over again until they, quote, get it right or master whatever technical skill that we're trying to teach. The use of media. This area has enormous potential. I mean, we've constructed a facility around it. Why? It's always been part of MultiView. We used to issue cassette tapes. And we knew that COs had drive times to and from work. And that was perhaps the only time that we'd be able to communicate. Because half the time, folks have on their asbestos boots and high heels, putting out the fires of the day. That drive to and from work was our opportunity to talk. And of course, it was very one-sided, but it did prove to be very effective. The use of media is huge. Right now, we're putting together all kinds of films and videos, proprietary in nature, that really document and teach the way of particular hospices. And if we believe this idea that the images in our minds drive our lives, the use of images takes on even more significance. So, use of media, auditory as well as visual, both need to be explored. Let's talk about a formal training sequence. What would that look like? Well, we'd think it'd start with some type of automated screening process where we're actually using the web or computer systems with minimal human interaction. And what we're doing is basically screening for fit. Do the individuals applying for the various positions fit us culturally? Do they have the technical competencies to be successful in our organization? So there would be different questions. There would probably be some expected self-learning or education that would happen, and there'd be some type of test. This would allow individuals really the ability to deselect before we ever expend very much on the training process. You know, they could say, you know, these folks are quite serious about what they're doing. I don't think I'm going to work out there. And so they'd get a great taste of what the experience of working for this hospice would be before they ever set foot in the door. And this is a highly desired situation. So we're screening for fit. Of course, we're hiring within these profiles. These profiles are based on top performers that are already in our organization. If we have a top clinician, okay, what are they like? What's their favorite color? Where do they go to school? What's their disposition? Hiring within profiles, I think it's an exceptional practice. Definitely something that's utilized by top-performing hospices. So we have the pre-screening. Then, of course, we call in those folks that we deem worthy for formal interviews, and we go through our standard processes there with the standard questions and getting a feel for the individuals. I would say this. If we ever do hire these individuals, give them short probationary periods. None of this, you know, 3 months or whatever. Hey, if somebody's not working out within a week, get rid of them. Be willing to pull the trigger on that situation and not waste any more time or energy on somebody that's just not going to work out. So I would shorten those. But assuming that they've got through the screening process and the interviews, what's the first thing that we would teach? We would teach vision and values. The CEO should come in and sell the vision and values of the organization. This would be a live presentation. I would make high use of props or anything that we can do to demonstrate who we are. And the more visual and entertaining it is, the better. But what must be conveyed is a crystal clear idea about the organization, how we go about things, and that we're serious about our mission. That has to come across. Next, we would teach the model, or our way, or our system. I would explain why and how it was created. I would go over our different metrics and measurements and how they're reviewed. It's important that folks know that things are going to be reviewed. That's one of the three characteristics of great accountability systems. I'd go over meeting formats, basic phone skills. The phone is something that's ignored at a lot of hospices, and it's this gigantic thing that can impact our census and really the care that we provide. And a lot of hospices don't give any attention, but make the assumption that people are great on the phone, and it just isn't the case. At MultiView, when we hire people, we listen to them on the phone first. And we really ask ourselves the question, do I like this person, or is this annoying, or what? The Hospice of the Future is going to deliver more and more of its care via telecommunicative means. So phone skills have to be taught. We cannot make the assumption that people just know how to do well on the phone. It doesn't work like that. Okay, so we've sold the vision and values. We've taught the model, the way. And then we need to teach the basic visit to everybody. There's probably common characteristics of our hospice's visit, and everybody in the organization needs to understand basically how it works. Why, again, we're building confidence in the system, and to the degree that we all understand the basic widget of what we do, I think it's highly important. Then after that, we'd break into our different technical groups, talk about organizational skills, documentation, again, phone skills, monitoring calls, all this. as well as our computer training, and of course, the business of hospice, which is covered in the MVI curricula that we've developed, again, for all network hospices. And this leads us to the conclusion of this message. And I'd like to go back to this idea of experiential learning. Ask the leaders of people development, we need to create an experience, something that people will remember. I know this, when I visit a hospice, the first thing I do is I go directly to the CEO's office and we have a conversation because I want to understand what the CEO is facing, and I'm listening and figuring out how I can plug in to help improve things. And the next stop for me after I leave the CEO's office is the training space. Take me to your training space. And of course, that always catches people off guard a little bit. But what am I looking for? I can enter that training space and see that hospice's commitment to people development. And if it's, you know, boring, it's all beige, you know, the furniture's all beat up and the pictures are crooked, I know that this hospice is not that into training. What I'm expecting, or what I would hope that the hospice would have, is almost a sacred space where you cross the threshold into the training environment or the training space, and you can feel the intention. You can look at the colors and the props and just the way it's constructed and know that these guys are totally serious about developing people and exploring the human potential. That's what we have the ability to do. And changing the physical space costs pennies. In fact, if I was to do it, I would probably paint a great big red circle on the ceiling of a training space and call it the center of the universe. This is where it all happens. Because you're creating an experience. And I'll say this, the wilder, the more memorable, the better. Use great big props. Use 6-foot blow-ups. In our training programs at MVI, we've always pulled out all kinds of different props and, you know, things that cost pennies, you know, swords and shields and weenie whistles and what have you. Why? Because we're trying to make an impression. And that's what you want to do at your respective hospice. You want to create sensations and feelings and things that people will reflect back upon, hopefully fondly, and say, that was a great training. You're going to love training at our hospice. And how often do we hear that statement? Probably not as often as we'd like. But we can hear it a lot more if we'd be thoughtful. Again, put some juice and enthusiasm and some creativity in developing people, because people development is the center of the universe. It's where the action happens, and it's how the mission gets accomplished. So let's get it done. The only way to world class is through developing people.